This is Isabel Kay interviewing for the Dialects and Heritage Project on the 9th of August 2022. Could I just ask you to introduce yourself to start, please?
Yeah, it's Graham Seal, and I'm here in Perth, Western Australia, and looking forward to our chat.
Perfect. First of all, just what brought you to Leeds in the first place, and when did you end up there?
Right, well, I got there in 1977. To do the master's program in folklife studies at the Institute of Dialect and Folklife Studies. And the reason that I was there was that I was living in Australia at the time, and I became interested in folklore and discovered that you couldn't study it here. You couldn't get a qualification in Australia, so I had to find somewhere else to go. As I'd been born in UK and been taken to Australia by my parents when I was very little, I thought, well, that's the best place for me to go. I'll do that. The trouble was that I had to have a degree first to do the master's, so I had to take an honours degree in history here in Australia first before I could qualify for the master's at Leeds, which is what I did eventually. So that was how I got there.
Right. And how did you first become involved with the Institute of Dialect and Folklife Studies, and what kind of role did you play on the projects?
Yeah, well, I was a student there, a graduate student in the Institute, and I was taking a number of the coursework, and I also did a thesis as well as field work too. So it was a combination of those things, and it was a year course, I think. Yes, that's right. It was an academic year, so it crossed from 77 to 78.
Cool. Was there any particular reasons why you chose folklore, or did you just find it interesting?
Yeah, I think so. I'd started out, I was a musician, and I was involved in the sort of folk revival back then. And we used to sing lots of folk songs, traditional songs of one kind or another. I got interested in the kind of background to them and the history of them, I suppose, and kind of one thing led to another. And before you knew it, there I was doing folklore.
Cool. Do you remember anyone in particular you worked with whilst at Leeds? Any colleagues that were...
Yeah, sure. The director of the Institute was Stuart Sanderson. Stuart Sanderson was a Scottish gentleman and folklorist of some note back in the day, and he was in charge of things, very friendly and happy chap. I remember that me and the other graduate students, I guess there were about eight of us, I think, in that year in that course, drank all his sherry one night towards the end of the course, so that was okay. I didn't seem to mind too much anyway. But Stuart was in charge, and the main lecturer was Tony Green, Dr. Tony Green, and he was also my supervisor for my thesis, and he took most of the courses that I took as well. And he was a very strong influence on me as well. His work and his approach, I think, to folklore at that time anyway, was something that I found very valuable and very useful. I should also mention that one of the other students I worked with a bit was Pete Harrop. Pete was studying there at the time too, and he was studying traditional drama, and I did some work with him on the Antrobus Soul Cakers, some field work as well with him. So three main people connected with the place that I was involved with at the time.
Whereabouts did you work on your projects? Were there specific buildings, or did you travel around a bit for it?
Yeah, I travelled around a bit. I lived in Garforth. I was there with my wife, Maureen, and we lived out in Garforth, which was an interesting experience for people from Australia. And we just worked in the Institute's headquarters. We were in the School of English at the time, I think, from memory. And the archives were up there as well along the corridor. Stanley Ellis, I think it was usually in the archives room there doing the dialectology. He taught dialectology, I think, although I didn't take that particular course myself. But, that was pretty much where everything happened around there, and of course, the pub.
Why do you think the Leeds Archive of Vernacular Culture is important, and what does it mean to you?
Well, I think it's a great initiative because it brings together a whole lot of things that were done in the past, a lot of important things, I think, in dialectology and folklore and related areas, a massive number of resources that were generated by all those projects back in the day, starting in the 1950s, really. And it's kind of brought them back to life, I think, and put them into an accessible framework for people, for research, of course, and just, I guess, teaching generally or outreach, at least. I know it's got a very strong outreach aspect to it, I think. You say you've got volunteers of one kind or another. I guess you're a student yourself, I guess. Are you studying folklore or dialectology or the...
I'm dialectology.
You're a dialectologist, right? Okay, good. Yeah, so, I mean, it's a great... there's a close relationship, obviously, between folklore and dialect and language and so forth. And I think that it's a great combination of things, as I said, and it makes all those resources and those skills available to people for all sorts of uses going, well, now and going on into the future as well.
And within that, what would you say the relevance of folklore is, and has that changed since when you first were in the project?
Yeah, folklore generally, I guess it's, in my view, it's very much the kind of basic way in which we kind of lubricate human experience, really. I think it's one of those things that exists pretty well in all societies and cultures, and it's quite a complex and broad field, of course. There's so many aspects to it that it can it's very hard to pin it down. Definitions are a bit of a difficulty, I think, for folklorists, as you know, probably by the number and variety of them. But we all know that there's something there that that requires a different approach than perhaps more formal sides of study or more formal aspects of culture. And folklore is the thing, and understanding those processes, how people interact with each other, and what it might all mean to them over time, how it changes over time, of course, or how it doesn't. I think those are the things that really, they're my interest anyway in folklore. So I think that probably most folklorists have got some aspect of that as on their list of why I do this stuff. Yeah.
If you were to repeat some of your research, would you expect there to be quite a large difference in your findings, or do you think that it would have remained quite similar?
That's a good question. I did my main research when I was at Leeds was on the looking at agrarian protest as a form of or folklore in the role of folklore in agrarian protest. So it was the Captain Swing riots and the Rebecca riots and those kind of things. And I'd done a previous thesis here in Australia on social banditry in bushranging, which is a local sort of Robin Hoods, Bush Robin Hoods, Ned Kelly and so forth. And I was interested in the relationship between social protest and folklore. And I think probably these days you wouldn't do that. I don't think it was very much a topic of the time. Things have moved on in various ways. But even if I were to do it today, I don't think it would change, because basically the subject was historical. And I don't think that much has changed in terms of the kind of folkloric approach to things. So I guess I'd probably go about doing it pretty much the same way, although it would be a lot easier, I think, because of the internet now and the access to digitised resources. That would probably help things along an awful lot, speed things up a bit as well. Wouldn't have to spend quite so much time down at the bottom of the Brotherton Library down there in the stacks with the one naked light bulb sort of illuminating, sort of, yeah, where you happen to be hiding or trying to find some documents and sources.
So just looking at, obviously this is part of the dialect study, do you think that the story of dialect study has changed quite a lot since the original survey?
Yeah, I'm probably not the right person to ask about that. I wasn't involved in any of that side of it myself, except tangentially. I knew how important it was, and it was certainly an important part of the Institute when I got there. As I said, my interests tended towards at that time more towards the historical sorts of things I've been talking about. Generally, as a general rule, obviously, anything like that, because it's so ephemeral in many ways, if you don't get it from somebody's lips at the time it's being spoken and nobody gets it and records it, well, that's it, it's gone forever, like most folklore, and we'd never know. So I think that it's very important to have that material and that knowledge.
And what would you like to see happen next with this project and with the archive and folklore studies in general?
Yeah. Well, I think what you're doing, carrying on doing what you're doing, is great. I mean, the promise of it, I mean, it's great you got that amount of funding. I mean, that's amazing for get funding for anything faintly related to folklore, really. So that's a major coup in itself, I think. So, yeah, pushing forward with the program as and the project, as I understand it. It's got quite a number of aspects. I know it's centered around dialectology, but that does allow all sorts of other things, celebrations and customs, of course, and pretty well any kind of verbal art, if you like, put it that way, or verbal folklore, as well as kind of material culture as well. So pretty well covers pretty well all the sorts of things that folklorists are interested in. And as I said, I think that it would hopefully develop perhaps further. I don't know if there's any actual formal teaching in the area anymore, apart from the dialectology. That would be nice to have a kind of return to that as well, or an option at least, I guess. We have had, in Australia, we haven't had much opportunity to develop folklore at an academic level. When I was working at the universities, I did teach folklore, and we did have a graduate diploma course for a while, a few years that ran here, but at the moment it's pretty thin on the ground. So I guess anything that can be done somewhere else is always at least it's there somewhere else, so people can hook into it even if it's from afar.
And whilst you were doing your research, do you have one particular memory that made kind of that time for you?
I do. It was really the Antrobus Soul Cakers, I think, with Pete Harrop and myself. One of the reasons I was with Pete was because I had a car. And he didn't have one, so we had to get up to Antrobus for the Halloween, and which is when it happens, of course. So yeah, we spent the night a couple of nights, I think it was, sort of chasing the Soul Cakers through the dark lanes of Cheshire, and as they went from pub to pub and did their play, and we recorded them at each pub, and kind of got more and more as the night wore on, they got more and more inebriated. But we couldn't, of course, because we were there in a professional capacity. But that was a great night, I guess, and or great nights, and it was great to be able to be part of that. And you actually got to feel, I suppose, what the power of that kind of tradition is in a community. And it was very up front, close and personal, I suppose. And the recordings that we'd made of it at the time, I think, were... I guess Pete's got there probably somewhere in the in the archive. I hope they are anyway. And so that was a great memory.
So just from that, would you say that the field work kind of area of it was one of the most interesting sections because you get to meet a lot of different people?
I think so. Yeah, that's right. I did some other field work on sort of family folk singing traditions as well in the south of England. That was my main, while I was there, I guess most of the work I do was historical research and archival research, but certainly one of the strengths of folklore, of course, is that you are out in the field and you're dealing with people in their everyday lives in different ways. So for me, that's one of the main attractions of it, and probably for most people who do it, I think it probably is as well.
Just within this kind of project, did you attend any conferences where you got to meet other researchers and work with other students?
Not at the time, but the year was pretty intense, actually. We were doing a number of coursework activities plus the thesis, which was quite major at the time. It was quite a big thesis. I think it was about 40,000 words. It was kind of halfway between what a PhD, I suppose, and what now constitutes a master's, or seems to in most places. And so there was a fair bit of work to be done there, I think, and wasn't an awful lot of time for other things. But later on, of course, I went to folklore conferences of one kind or another in America and Australia and Britain, and met many of folklorists of one kind or another from various places at those conferences. Yeah.
People tend to say that in England dialects are starting to be lost and everyone's converging towards one way of speaking. Obviously, if you have experience both in Australia and in the UK, would you say it's the same globally, or between the different variants are we diverging?
It's a good question. One of the things in Australia is that it's often said there's no sort of Australian dialect, if you like, that everything's the same, which generally, though, if you go and speak to people from different states, we used to be colonies before we were states. I don't know if you know the history, but they will probably, generally speaking, people in the street don't hold that to be true at all. They will say, oh, I can tell a Queenslander from a Victorian or a New South Wales person from a Western Australian. So there's a popular kind of ear out there, I think, which doesn't necessarily fit terribly well with what the linguists have come up with so far in Australia. But we do have quite a lot of different, in vocabulary, of course, there's quite a lot of differences. We're famous for slang, of course, and or infamous is probably a better way to describe it. And there are definitely lexical items that are very much identified with different states, and people from different states will know what they're talking about and others won't. So you certainly get that. That's the Australian situation. As I said, my knowledge of the British situation or anywhere else is relatively restricted, so probably I'm not qualified to comment.
So from more of a personal point of view in general, what would you say dialect means to you?
Dialect, well, as I said, I think it's the way, obviously, that people speak to each other, with each other, and not necessarily in the same way to the rest of the world. So, again, it comes back, I guess, to what I'm interested in folklore, which is the way that people do operate in constituencies or groups, and the way that they identify with those groups within them, and, of course, outside as well, and how they relate to the rest of the world through their sense of identity, which, of course, comes out in the way they use their language.
Do you have any favourite dialect words that you've heard used or you use yourself?
Right. Oh, well, wonderful words, aren't they? British dialect, it's a great... mizzle is one I think I've come to, the sort of the... I always like... can't think of any others off the top of my head, but whenever you kind of come across, they're really good. There's a guy called Robert McFarlane. I don't know if you come across him. He's a writer, and has written quite a few books about dialect. He wrote a book called The Lost Words, which was a children's book actually, but it was based upon him reading an article by a dialectologist actually about how all the dialect words were being lost. So he spent about 10 years, I think it was, going around collecting as many as he could, and then he put them together into various books that he's written about it. So he's not an academic, but he's certainly a clever guy and someone who writes extremely well, and he's certainly on the same path and track, I guess, as we are too. So he's definitely worth a look. So, yeah, dialect, it's just an endless fascination, I think, the terms, the folk terms.
So now we're just looking more about your own dialect story. When and where were you born, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, I was born in 1950 in Canterbury, Kent, England. And as I said earlier, I came to Australia. My parents brought me out here when I was about six or so. And when I was about 11 or 12, I returned to England for a year and went to school in England for a year and then returned again to Australia after that. And I've sort of more or less been back and forth. I basically live in Australia, but I've spent a few periods of my life living in England for one reason or another. So that's a sort of broad biographical spread of it.
And whereabouts did your parents grow up?
My mother grew up in Canterbury, and my father was from Sussex, so around Brighton and Burgess Hill, that area.
Are there any words that you think you use that were local to where you were first born?
No. I can't think of any. No. As I said, I had a bit of a sort of scattered, I suppose, experience, and I don't remember any particular sort of Canterbury-type words, if you like, or Kentish words, I suppose, that would fit that bill at all, no. Can't think of a thing.
Have you picked up on any kind of words or phrases from different people you've met or from the various places you've lived?
Well, I speak sort of an Australian vernacular style, I suppose, which is what most people in Australia speak anyway. We tend not to be very formal, so informality is valued in the Australian sort of interactions, I suppose. Because I've studied, I've actually written a couple of books about Australian folk speech, which you might call dialectology, or it's related, obviously. So I've collected a lot of that. I've got to the stage now where I don't really know the difference between what I know and what I've studied and researched. So I'm probably not much use to you as a subject for this particular kind of exercise. So probably I'll have to leave that one there, I think.
Would you say that whilst you were in Leeds studying, you picked up quite the Leeds kind of accent and terminology, or did you stick with the Australian vernacular?
Yeah, I'd probably stick with the Australian vernacular, I guess. As I said, it was fairly intense, very busy period actually of time, so mostly involved with study and things like that. So the interactions that I had were mostly with people in the course, most of whom didn't come from Leeds. They were from other countries around the world. It was an international course, or from other parts of Britain. So, I didn't pick up anything of that kind there.
And just as a final thing, how would you describe your own accent to someone?
My accent is basically fairly broad Australian with a few smatterings of my English background left behind. So I still say dance instead of dance, which is dance is the proper Australian way to say it. Dance. The name Sandra would be said by most Australians as Sandra. So, yeah, those sorts of things. So there's a few little things. Occasionally people pick me up on it, interestingly. As I said, there's a popular ear out there, I think, which is pretty good, and people will often pick up things like that and say, oh, you're English, even though I've been here for most of my life speaking the way I'm speaking to you now.
So just for the final section, it's a bit of a survey, so I'll just show you pictures or prompts, and okay. I just need you to tell me what you would call them or things.
Flashcards, is it?
Like flashcards. A couple of them are pictures, but the rest are just kind of questions. So the first one would be, what would you call that creature, if you can see it?
I can't even see it. It's all blurry.
Is it really blurry?
Yeah, could be anything. Could be a caterpillar.
I'm not sure how else to do it, because this won't let me share pictures, that's all.
Would be a hedgehog?
Yeah,
it is a hedgehog. Oh, I saw the spike. Just about make those out. So I'd call it a hedgehog. Not in Australia. That'd be an echidna in Australia. Does it look like a dragonfly?
It's a spider.
Oh, right. Okay. Nah. The daddy long legs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then I've got this one.
Earwig.
Yep. Then this is a type of garden weed, if you could make that one out.
It is, isn't it? Yeah, can't weed. Oh, no, I can't tell you what that is. No, don't know. Can't make it out.
I'm not sure I would know that one either. Then this would be a drop of...
A drop of water? Can't see.
Yeah.
It looks like water on a stem of something, is it? A drop? Yes, a drop. Uh-huh. I'd call it a drop of water.
And then this would be a bag of...
Lollies?
Yeah.
Which in English, lollies in Australia.
And then what would you call one of these...
Dumpling.
Uh-huh. And then what would you call these?
Scones.
Yeah. And can you just tell me how many of them there are?
Looks like there are 1, 2, 3, 4. About four, but it's a bit hard to tell. It's very indistinct.
Yeah. What word would you use for this?
No, I can't make that out.
A vegetable.
An onion, is it? Leek?
Yeah.
Slot.
What would you call this kind of position? Like, what is the woman giving?
A piggyback.
Yeah. And this is the last one, don't worry. What would you say this was?
Seesaw.
Yeah, perfect. So the next part is just two sentence prompts, and there'll be a blank in the middle, and I just need you to fill it in for me with what you'd normally say.
Yeah.
So the first one is, he asked me to fix it, and blank, no way, do it yourself.
He asked me to fix it, and I said, no way, do it yourself. Yeah.
Perfect. And the second one is just, the food was blank tasty.
The food was very tasty.
Right. So these ones are just questions. What do you call a room in a house for storing food?
A pantry or a larder.
Mm-hmm. If you haven't eaten any food for a long time, you're bound to feel...
hungry.
What words do you use for something to eat?
Food.
What do you call a coffee you might get from a cafe with lots of milk in it?
That's a good one. You call it a latte probably here. Yeah.
What's the dairy product that you usually spread on toast and sandwiches?
Butter.
Yep. Which word or phrase would you use to indicate a temporary break in a game when points can't be scored?
Interval.
If you fall over in the playground, your knee might be...
grazed.
If you got covered in dirt at the playground when you get home, you might need to get in the...
bath.
When children are very excited, you might say they are full of...
Just thinking about my grandchildren. full of joy.
At the end of a long and tiring day, you'd say you were absolutely...
knackered.
Which word would you use to mean not attending school?
Playing hooky. Wagging it. Yeah, either of those.
Sometimes when children are really naughty, their parents tell them that someone will come and take them away. What do you call this person?
A boogeyman or bogeyman.
You grow crops and raise animals on a...
farm.
When you walk in the countryside after heavy rain, your shoes will be covered in...
mud.
When driving in icy or wet weather, you must take care because the roads are...
slippery.
Which word do you use as a term of endearment, even with strangers?
I don't have one word. I think it would depend on who it was and the circumstances, really. Friend, I guess, would be the most general one, yeah. The people I know, with strangers, I guess it would just be acquaintance, really, maybe that would be the, yeah.
Which word would you use to refer to someone as very attractive?
Well, if it was a male, it would be handsome, I guess. If it was a female, it could be pretty or beautiful.
What is your word for spreading rumours?
Gossip.
A picture not hanging straight is hanging...
crooked.
What do you call a very small piece of wood that has gotten your finger?
Splinter.
What do you call a person who mends shoes and boots?
A cobbler or a bootmaker. Or a snob.
Do you have any other words that you think are need to make note of or anything?
Not really. As I said, it's slightly so I perhaps don't fit the pattern too well with my background and so forth. But no, I don't think that would be that's probably it. Yeah, no, can't think of any anymore.
So that's everything for the interview, the three sections done. So thank you very much for taking part and talking to me today.
No, that's no problem, Lizzie. Thank you. And all the best to you.
Yeah, you too.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.